This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to 94.9 FM.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, nail it, create it, change the point it to impress it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quick, rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, flip it, drag it, drop it, zip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, gem and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch it, date it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, send it.
Good afternoon, this is Technogaze, the show where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets, and technology.
And we plug in.
We do plug in.
To the nets.
We dance.
Really? I don't think we do.
Yes, we do. I think we do.
Come on, Jason, you just did a bit of a jig before.
That was not for public consumption. This is off to a good start.
Yeah. So with me in the studio today, of course, my name is Mark. With me here today is Michael.
Hello.
And a voice who, well, hasn't been heard for a couple of weeks now, but he's back.
Wow. Everyone will have really missed me. It's been a whole 2 weeks.
Was it 2 weeks?
No. It's been about a month.
About a month.
Yeah.
Of course, Jason, all the way from Sydney.
Flown in especially.
It is kind of funny the way you stumble over the word Sydney as well. He's from Sydney.
I don't have anything wrong, any problem with Sydney people. Some of my best friends are from Sydney.
Yes, I am.
Precisely. So we'll be covering some of the latest in technology, including
we're going to talk a little bit about 3D printing.
Yes.
No, actually, we're not.
I'm looking
That's the gag because Michael's here. We're going to talk a little bit about net neutrality. We're going to talk a little bit about the Bitcoin casino. And there may be a discussion about, but not a live demonstration of sex with glass. At least I'm hoping there's no live demonstration.
And somebody's turned 30.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Well, something. Not somebody.
Something. The Apple Mac turned 30. Technically, it is today that it's turned 30 because it's still the 24th in the US.
Wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Because that's right. Where it was designed as opposed to made.
Mm-hmm.
is it Cupertino or Cupertino?
Cupertino, isn't it?
I've always assumed it's Cupertino. Have we told everyone what we're talking about? The fact that the Mac has turned 30?
Yes, no.
Did we actually say that? Because it did sound like we glossed over it.
That's by the by.
And of course, the Mac turning 30 is a significant thing because it was one of the first. Well, the Apple IIe was really the first personal computer sort of mass marketed. But the 1984 ad that was released as part of the introduction for the Mac was a big thing for the time, and was the Apple Mac itself was considered Steve Jobs's baby, and he's, you know, really the driving force behind the design of that computer. So significant,
yes, considering that at one stage nobody thought Apple might even survive.
Mm. And of course, speaking of significance, you mentioned before net neutrality makes mention or has hit the news this week, so we'll talk a little bit about that.
Yeah,
and net neutrality often being a US-based thing, like it's not so much an issue for here in Australia, but you know, there's always repercussions. So
yeah, I think there's a big chance that it will become an issue for us in Australia. So it's worth looking at what's happened in the US.
Mm. Well, shall we kick on then? So to start off with, we thought we'd put together there's these sunglasses, wasn't there? There's some new technology around sunglasses that are helping out people who are a little bit maybe colorblind.
a little bit colorblind.
I guess you either are or you aren't.
No, well, actually, there are different degrees of color blindness. So there are some people that are more affected by than less affected.
Yes.
And, there's a yet another startup, because everybody in this world is a startup these days, called Enchroma in the US, who are using some sort of mathematical formula to help, I don't know whether trick is the right word, or help the brain in understanding the difference between different colours and being able to sense those colours. And they claim that they can boost your ability to identify colours by up to 30% and also give you a 70% improvement in colour discrimination.
Right.
And, you know, there are different people who have different degrees of colour blindness. Some have trouble, for instance, identifying differences in traffic light colours.
Right.
And, you know, this new pair of glasses helps you with this. Now, there have been other sunglasses in the past that have used different types of filters to help you identify colours. This one is sort of similar, but it uses up to 100 different layers of filters on the glass with different types of opacity to restrict light coming through to help you identify this.
And I understand, because there's different types of colour blindness, right? So I suspect that they could even tailor that to individual colour blind needs, perhaps.
Potentially, yes.
That's required.
Yeah. Now, it's not cheap. Mm. You're looking still at $600 for a pair of glasses.
Mm. Well, it's only a little bit more expensive than my designer sunglasses.
but prescription glasses for people of you know, short or long sightedness.
I mean, would go to that amount.
I'm talking
as well.
To people.
There's
with
two
glasses
of us in
on.
The room with glasses on. Yes, that's right.
Mine is just for common blindness.
Well, so I have prescription glasses, but I tend not to get prescription sunglasses.
Right.
It just feels like too much hassle.
Yeah. And this is one of the things around these particular sunglasses. They are sunglasses, and perhaps because they need to be used in
bright sunlight
for them to be effective, right?
Yeah, and they don't work in artificial light, so you can't bring it into the office and use that to help, you know, see the colours better on your computer screen or anything like that.
Oh, it's
good. I mean, they are sunglasses.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. But, it's pretty nifty and a good use of the technology to, help aid your brain in distinguishing these colour differences.
And passive technology as well.
Yes.
As in not powered.
Mm. Mm. No circuits or anything like that.
No batteries to replace.
Yeah, how bad would that be? You're out and about, and all of a sudden the battery in your glasses runs out and you can't tell what's what anymore.
And you go blind.
Yeah.
This is leading very well into the Google Glass discussion we're going to have later on around the sex ad, but we'll save that for later on.
We're
in the
not
show.
Talking about sex again, are we?
I didn't bring it up, but I think we are.
Somebody said no live demonstration.
I did. Mainly because we don't have Google Glass, but... Yeah.
Oh, that's one of a number of reasons.
There's other reasons.
It would go down so well on radio.
Certain licensing issues. And sort of. Anyway, another thing that came up this week as well. Of course, the NSA and the response to the US has to what all these revelations that spying is occurring and so forth.
We talk about this so often, I think we actually need intro music for it.
What would that
probably
that intro
the
music.
Imperial March.
Not net neutrality, NSA. The Obama has given another apparently significant speech.
When
yes, the
was
Obama
this?
Has.
Sorry. What speech was this, and when?
Apparently, he's now responding to the NSA's. He's actually giving some sort of tangible response to it, as in this is what we're going to do about these revelations that we've been spying on our own citizens and citizens outside of the US as well. But I'm not actually sure, like you, Michael, what was actually said, because a lot of the coverage of it has been a bit of ho-hum, a bit of what is it all about, you know, the underlying currents, not necessarily about the speech itself. Having said that, has anyone actually in the studio seen the speech at all?
I may have watched it live.
Oh, really?
What time was this in the morning?
It was about 4 a.m. I had just gotten back from my holiday, so my sleep patterns were still quite messed up, and... I woke up at 4 a.m. and I looked at Twitter and people are like, oh my God, Obama's talking about this. I'm like, sure, why not? I'll have a look at the live stream of it. So,
are you some sort of US political junkie?
I used to be, I'm not really. But I was really impressed because when I looked at the live stream, there were no less than five American flags on the stage behind Obama. One is not good enough. But so he spent a long time talking about the benefits of the benefits of what they've been doing. You know, they've been stopping attacks and, you know, finding bad people. And it's the same rhetoric that we always hear about the surveillance that's going on from the NSA and, you know, all the other US spy agencies, is that, you know, if you don't have anything to hide, then, you know, there's no problem and no one will be looking at anything that you're doing and everything. But then, so he did announce a few changes, but they were quite limited. Previously the, I'm going to say the NSA, I'm not entirely sure if it is the NSA or not, had been able to go to a, to requisition surveillance records without a judge's order, and they will now actually require a judge to sign off on things. But there's been a lot of, and as we started saying in at the start of this segment, we've heard a lot of people responding to the speech without a lot of discussion about what happened and what was announced in the speech, because ultimately it feels like not a lot was announced in the speech. It's not really that new to say that the NSA needs to get a court order in order to get access to these records. All they really have to do is just, you know, go around to a judge's place and get him to sign a piece of paper, and, you know, that happens all the time as it is anyway.
Yeah, and there's, you know, particularly in the US, there's often criticism of the, even the judicial arm of are they, is it a separate arm of the government, or are they above or below? I don't know the actual,
there is, you know, a separate, hierarchy. There is a separation between law and government, yeah.
But there is often this idea, because judges are appointed by officials, or at least recommended by, you know, the likes of the president, you know, there's always bias.
This cozy arrangement, yeah.
Yeah, and so, you know, how do you get that court order signed? You go to a judge which is more friendly to the...
To the political leanings of what you're requesting.
Yeah.
It will be so much easier when your judges are virtual and you can just send a message to it and it'll reply back as approved straight away.
Does that actually lead into the future that Judge Dredd is coming up with? You know, where the judges are roaming the streets with guns and just taking the law into their own hands?
Oh, jeez.
No, they won't be real people. They'll be bots.
So there's been a lot of response. The tech community doesn't seem very impressed with the changes that Obama has announced. And there's been more companies coming out this week and saying, oh, no, the NSA doesn't have access to our servers. Notably, Tim Cook came out and said it again for Apple this week. But we know from other revelations that it doesn't matter if they have access to the servers or not, because they're monitoring the traffic. And so unless every single piece of that traffic is totally and utterly encrypted, which, let's be honest, we're talking about Apple here. They can't get iCloud working. What are the chances that everything is encrypted properly?
But then again, there was this story about RSA a few weeks ago whereby they supposedly handed over their encryption keys or had a backdoor to allow government agencies to decrypt traffic. So even if it's encrypted, it doesn't matter.
And the RSA CEO said that's absolutely false.
Yeah. So, who do you believe?
But who can tell?
Yeah.
And the other, Jacob Applebaum made a speech a few weeks ago as well, which we mentioned on the show, talking about the plethora of devices that they have to monitor traffic on the way in. So, you know, what's that NSA box that's just sitting outside the Apple data center?
Yeah.
That's the thing that collects the information.
Do they have a spiffy logo on it?
Probably.
An American flag.
Well, not many who will get
it. Just has a prism.
It's got their, yeah, right.
It's actually just got like a Pink Floyd album cover on it. Everyone's just like, cool, it's Pink Floyd. Let's just put it in the data center.
Well, while we're on the topic of the US and stuff that's going on over there, in a few moments we'll talk about net neutrality. Not really a term that's used here in Australia so much, but definitely something that has made it big over there. The Federal Communications Commission, is that what they're called? FCC. They have had a bit of a blow in fighting for net neutrality, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a few moments. This is TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9. TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're covering some of the latest in technology, gadgets, consumer electronics. It is 18 minutes past 12 right now. And if you do want to talk to us while we're here in the studio, if you want to nerd it up with us on TechnoGaze, you can do so by...
Way to sell it, Mark.
I embrace the nerd term. I think I love being a nerd. I'm proud of being a nerd, in fact. as
if you'd like to nerd it up with Mark, you can hit us up at Twitter. We have a Twitter account. It's Technogaze.
That's the most nerdy way of, of communicating.
Look, I'm embracing it, Mark. I'm owning the term, okay? You can reach us on Twitter at Technogaze. That's TechNogaze. And I really hope that I spelled that correctly because I'm not going to go back and do it again. You can also email us on air at joy.org.au and you can SMS us at 0427-JOY949.
Indeed.
And there's also the telephone. How old-fashioned that? Telephone.
Oh, that's that thing in my pocket. Can I make phone calls on that as well?
Telephony machine.
Yeah.
If you call 1-300-JOY949, you can speak to Mushin and leave a message for us.
Thank you, Mushin, for being there as our support, as he has done for quite some time now.
He's our rock.
He is.
Yeah.
Actually, I think so. Net neutrality.
Speaking of rocks...
is that a segue? I don't think that is even a segue.
It sort of is. It's going to go down like a rock.
All right.
So the FCC lost a lawsuit against Verizon. Actually, I believe Verizon brought the lawsuit against the FCC many, many years ago in the States this week, effectively killing, according to internet punditry at least, net neutrality in the US.
What is net neutrality?
I'm very glad you asked, Michael. It's not in the run sheet at all for people to ask that question.
Please call me Dorothy.
Are you someone's friend?
Dixer, apparently.
Yes.
Well, I think we've gone several levels down the conversational stack now.
Pop it back up.
Yeah, cool. Let's pop back up. So net neutrality is the idea that your internet connection should effectively be a dumb pipe or something that data flows through with no preference for or against that data based on its source. Mm. So a good example of the concept of net neutrality is to imagine that your internet provider decides to slow down traffic that's coming from YouTube, but speed up traffic coming from, say, QuickFlix. Why would that happen? And, you know, what happens? Suddenly YouTube videos take even longer than they already do to buffer. Maybe that's, you know, this might actually explain what happens every time you want to watch a video on Vine. But why would that happen? Maybe the ISP owns part of QuickFlix and they want people using QuickFlix instead of YouTube because they make more money that way.
Yeah, so there's this idea, I guess, of the company that offers you the broadband service that they might want to push their consumers down a certain path for their own commercial benefit or their own commercial reasons, whether that be because they own the content providers.
Yeah.
Or it could be that they just have a deal with the content providers, perhaps.
Yeah, there might just be money-changing hands. It may not necessarily be an ownership stake. So that's actually what's happened in the landscape of the US broadband and telecommunications industry. Mm. The largest ISPs in the country also own broadcasters and content providers. So, for example, there's an ISP called Comcast in the States. They own the broadcaster channel NBC, which I'm sure lots of people have heard from. And so Comcast might decide to stop their broadband subscribers from viewing CBS content purely because it's competing content to their own. And so, I mean, if you were to bring this back home here, it's like saying that, just pick an example at random, you know, Internode customers might not be able to access Google, but they can use Bing instead.
Right.
And so it's taking that freedom of choice away from you.
It's not so much about necessarily preventing access, but more so limiting or slowing down access, right?
It could go each way. Right. I mean, so there's access and there's restriction.
Right.
And so you can give your customers access to something in preference to something else, and you can also restrict your customers' access to competing services if you don't want them.
Sure.
Now, in the US, the situation is very different to Australia because most of the internet is delivered by cable companies who are providing cable TV.
Mm.
And because it's cable, you usually have very little choice, if any choice, over who you can get your internet service from.
Mm.
That's right. In the US, most areas are only covered by one cable provider. And if you want internet access via cable, you don't have a choice. You have to go with that company that services your apartment.
And I don't think there's a lot of ADSL there.
I think you're right. I don't think there is a lot of ADSL. I'm not really sure why. I'm not terribly familiar with that.
I suspect because cable is so prevalent there compared to to here in Australia, and there's the geographical sort of aspects of that. And cable kind of became entrenched in the US much earlier than particularly Australia.
Oh, yeah, years earlier.
Yeah. And there was sort of learnings from that market that stopped you know, us doing the same thing here. At least there was a competition sort of Optus and Telecom at the time. Or, no, Big Pond. No, wait, what were they called? Foxtel. One of those companies.
There's Optus Vision versus Foxtel, if you remember.
Thank you. Right.
And then there's OzStar as well.
Yes.
There's other cable providers as well.
And there was a sort of a purpose behind the Australian, you know, implementation of cable or pay TV, in fact. But at the same time, like, the market was quite different as well, that free-to-air TV was very much a popular service is today.
We still have very strong free-to-air networks in Australia, and I think it's only in the last few years that we've really seen cable channels in Australia really pop up and really bring it to the free-to-air, really bring it to the free-to-air channels on a content level.
Yeah.
But it's worth thinking about what has actually happened this week in the lawsuit in the US as well.
Because
the FCC has been arguing for net neutrality, saying that these providers don't have the right to slow down or speed up data based on its origin. And their main argument has been against Verizon, who I believe brought the lawsuit against them. Verizon is one of the country's biggest mobile and broadband carriers, and they actually argued that one of the arguments that they made was that net neutrality infringed on their freedom because it forced them to do business in a particular way. And so that feels
it
like a
forced
bit of
us
a
to not do deals in the way that we want to do deals to prevent our consumers from doing stuff that they want to do.
Yep.
That's really what it comes down to.
But
this is such a, I don't know, a reflection of the US at the moment, and it's starting to filter into arguments here in Australia as well.
It is.
You are infringing on my rights by preventing me from infringing on your rights. It's kind of, anyway.
You're infringing on my God-given right to infringe on your rights.
Yes.
My right's God-given, yours isn't.
I was going to ask, what's the competition law in the US compared to Australia? Because the ACCC here is relatively strong.
I think that's true. I think that's actually one of the reasons why a lot of the measures that we're seeing happen in the US, and especially in a non-net neutrality embracing United States, I think that's why we don't see a lot of those policies happening here. But it is interesting to see the result. So the possible results of what can happen in the ISP landscape in the US, some of them we have had here for quite a while, but we don't tend to regard them with as much suspicion as they are in the US. What was really interesting out of the court case is that the court said that it was actually convinced that the FCC was correct, that they had the correct argument, and that you know, the internet should function the way that the FCC said, but they'd erred in their classification of ISPs and the cable carriers back in 2002, and so they can't actually regulate them.
Right. So the FCC
has to reclassify them if they want to actually pass their net neutrality legislation.
So they're basing this on this classification system that the FCC implemented back in 2002, 12 years ago, and it's only today. Like, this is 12 years is a lifetime in internet terms, right?
Yeah, it is. And so this is not a new court case either. This court case has been going for quite a while. And I was listening to some tech podcasts, and someone made the point that the case has been in the courts for so long that the explanatory graphics that were used in the courtroom describing net neutrality include MySpace.
My what?
Yeah, exactly. That's how long this case has been argued for, and Verizon has finally won it. So there's been a few movements in this direction in the last month. AT&T, another US carrier, introduced a concept called sponsored data a couple of weeks ago, where AT&T could charge the provider of content, for example, Google for YouTube, for providing their data to you, possibly at no charge to you. So it's like you get to watch YouTube for free because Google pays AT&T for your YouTube data.
And I have heard similar concepts here in Australia, which you were alluding to before, around, say, a public broadcaster's content on a thing called iView.
Sure, but that's a little bit different, though.
Might be free to me, but there's no... Like, the ABC definitely aren't paying my internet provider to for that privilege.
It might explain their budget, but yeah. I don't know if your internet provider charges more than 8 cents a day for this content or not. But so AT&T is possibly collecting money twice for this data, because they might be charging you for the data that you're using and charging Google for providing the data to you. Mm. And so AT&T could just be sitting in the middle just gobbling up data everywhere for everyone using the internet and getting paid twice for the same packet.
Yeah.
And so we have this in Australia, as you said, with unmetered content, but the way that it's been presented to Australian customers has always been of a network architecture perspective.
Yes.
So
yes.
It was simply a fluke that the ABC and iiNet would have servers on the same interconnection and they could pass data freely between them. Mm. So iiNet would make a big thing about not charging you for iView data. Yeah.
And for the ISP in that situation, it's just commercially possible to offer that for free, because literally the data going from ABC to iiNet is free, as opposed to it going to Internode for a price. Internode and iiNet are the same
actually, they
company.
Are now the same company. But and this might actually be why I believe iView is no longer unmetered on
yes.
iiNet, and that might be why, as they merged their companies together, maybe their network infrastructure changed.
Mm. And there were definitely, when I remember when the internet was sort of gaining ground here in Australia, there were certain backbones that were being developed. I think, what was it called, VixNet or something like that, where the ISPs are connected to this, and there are lots and lots of small ones back
in
the day.
Pipe is one of the big ones in Australia.
Right.
It's an interconnect with all the ISPs, but all the ISPs would put servers in the same data center so that they could pass data freely between each other.
Mm.
And that's great for ISPs in Australia to pass data between each other, but when most people are getting data from the States, it's really not really that much of a help.
Yeah, that was the thing, right? You'd be able to connect to a game server that might have been at the other local ISP, but whether you could actually get the content you really wanted for free is a different thing. But so going back to the US, they have gone down this path now where it's basically allowed for internet providers to start, being biased over one content provider over the other. What will that mean for content provision in the future? I mean, when you start thinking about technology that they might implement here, there might be caching mechanisms in there, so it may not be any more or less expensive for YouTube traffic to be delivered to you, because they've cached it anyway, or there's some sort of broadcast mechanism or something that they've introduced. They still might count the data going to each individual consumer.
Well, I'm pretty sure that would be what's happening at the moment.
Well, yeah, and that then flows on to how the agreement's set up with the content provider as well. So it's all about bits that aren't actually flowing around. It's more just numbers of people apparently consuming stuff.
So the internet has become Wall Street.
We're
just moving zeros and ones between buckets. No one will notice. The entire thing won't collapse at all.
But the thing with net neutrality is that it is bits, ones and zeros, and we don't discriminate. Whereas if you suddenly either charge more or slow down the speed, or even worse still, disrupt. So you might, as an ISP, say, well, I don't like BitTorrent traffic because it's potentially competing with my cable TV service that you're now not paying for because you're illegally downloading things. I will disrupt BitTorrent traffic. Then, that's a very different environment that we're in.
Mm.
So I think that's true, and I think if you look at what the US response to that is going to be, it's going to be a case of commercial competition. And so if it becomes known that one ISP is throttling BitTorrent traffic, customers will move away and vote with their wallets, so they say.
But that's the problem with the US. You can't move away, because if your cable provider is your only one and only ISP, where do you go?
It's amazing what competition does, isn't it?
Yeah. Competition isn't bad.
Well, for that particular example, though, BitTorrent may well be considered bad in itself, right?
BitTorrent's just a protocol. It depends what you do with it.
Yes, thank you. That needed to be said.
Yes.
This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're trying to do justice to very in-depth topics. It is 28 minutes to one here on TechnoGaze. If you want to contact us while we're in the studio, you can do so by texting us 0427-JOY-949. You can email us on air@joy.org.au. You can call Mushin.
You can tweet us as well.
Yes. You can call us, 1300-JOY-949, and you can tweet us at TechnoGaze, TechnoGaze.
Oi, oi, oi.
It's almost Australia Day, isn't it? We'll be back with more in a few moments.
Techno Gaze
here on Joy 94.9. We're covering some of the latest in technology.
Michael has broken the studio.
We're doing some on-site repair work and it's not working.
Unfortunately, if we do get a text, I won't be alerted to it. But there are others in the studio who will be alerted to it, so it's okay. So do text us in 042.
We'll be alert but not alarmed.
What are you saying, I'm alarmed? What are you saying?
It's very alarmist, Mark.
Speaking of alarmist, good one there.
I know.
The Ukraine. Ukraine is a bit of a geography lesson to start off with.
Can we load up the Wikipedia page for the Ukraine?
It's an Eastern European country. It's been dealing with citizens protesting new laws that are preventing them from covering their face or setting up tents or using sound systems in what would otherwise be a peaceful assembly. So apparently there's protesting going on over there. And
there's a lot of protests and like armed clashes with police and there's all sorts of things going on.
So the government are trying to curtail that to a degree and stop people from anonymizing themselves by, you know, covering their faces and that sort of stuff. As many as 100,000 people are actually involved in these protests. And 4 days ago, a very Orwellian message was received by a bunch of these protesters reading something like...
It was a text message.
Yes, it was a text message to their phone. Dear subscriber, you are registered as a participant in a mass disturbance. Full stop.
And that's pretty scary to like, just all they receive
need to do,
that.
All they need to do is change it to dear citizen.
Yes. Actually, well, we don't know how their government is run. Maybe everyone is a subscriber to their government. If you would like your democracy, please, you know, insert $10 and wait for another year or something.
Yes, well...
Actually, that's more like Kickstarter, really. It's but, yeah.
A bit like paying tax. Now, the suggestion, of course, is the Ukraine government has obtained location information of subscribers from their telecommunications companies there.
And the telcos say they did not provide any such information to the government.
Of course,
they may have just gotten it from the NSA.
Or a surveillance system similar to what has been described as the NSA's surveillance system. And, you know, Eastern European countries, maybe they're not so aligned with the US and might not have agreements with the NSA, but at least the technology is there and available and could well be implemented.
I can't imagine the government doing this without the help and cooperation of the telco. Because you'd need the location information to say, here are all of these phones that are in proximity of these towers where the disturbance of the protest is taking place.
Yes.
And then being able to blurt out an SMS message to all of those.
Unless they actually control the telecommunication towers and the carriers just lease them.
Well, that's possible too.
So, you know, Could be many ways. They really didn't need it.
It depends on the infrastructure and the way that it's set up there. But there's also, if they're able to get any access to any sort of network pipe between the phones and, say, Facebook, and location services are turned on Facebook, then perhaps, you know, they're just obtaining the GPS locations that way.
Can I say it's nice to see a mass disturbance that's not been caused by BlackBerry Messenger?
What?
Since when has BlackBerry Messenger
that
caused...
That was the London riots.
Oh, really?
Yeah, BlackBerry Messenger was used to incite all the London riots.
Oh, good to know where...
Well, at least all the rioters were communicating with BBM.
There is no talk about what actual software was being used.
It's quite refreshing because this is just an old school SMS. There's no, you know, it's like ducking down a network layer protocol. You don't need the higher levels anymore.
Now, luckily, I guess, or if you're, you know, if you're for the protesters, you'd consider this lucky that they weren't actually fazed by this particular Orwellian message. They still turned up in ski masks and the like.
Yeah, and that's not really surprising. I've seen videos of the police like firing shots into the crowd and then dancing afterwards. So yeah, it's
right.
Yeah, it's look, it's not a good time to be in the Ukraine either way, if we make light of it. But yeah, it's some pretty serious stuff going on there.
Yeah, there is talk of rubber bullets being fired into crowds, and
as opposed to the Red Dwarf version with rubber nuclear weapons. So I was browsing Twitter yesterday, I noticed that someone had come up with a screenshot from a task tracker in a some web software development company where they'd asked for a feature, and the developer had commented on the ticket saying, "This is a great idea. I'll implement it, but it won't be implemented very soon because I live in the Ukraine and we're having a revolution."
Right. So, well, you know, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, get your priorities right.
Carry on. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I guess this is one up on previous accusations of protest suppression, you know, with the likes of Egypt and so forth going on, where, you know, mobile networks have just been switched off over
yeah.
there.
Yeah, they just shut it all down to stop people.
Mm. So it's a different sort of way of governments...
I don't believe it worked.
What, the network's been turned off?
Yeah.
Or, yeah, right. Well, regardless, people still want to fight,
yeah.
I suspect. So, you know... One man's freedom fighter is another one man's terrorist. Just thought I'd put that out.
Yeah, it's like you are the NSA.
This is Techno Gaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're covering the latest in technology, gadgets, and consumer electronics. Should we move on to some lighter stuff, perhaps? The human genome has...
That sounds light.
Yeah. It's been services popping up around the world on being able to sequence your own human genome, or your own genome, is that how
your own genetic makeup?
Yes, thank you. For
your mascara's smudged.
For the low cost of how much?
$5,000.
Wow. Okay, but.
You can now get it at Bargain Basement 1000.
Right.
which, when you think about it, it's an 80% reduction in costs. That's what technology is doing for everything. You know, it's reduced the cost of everything except my mobile data. It just keeps going up. Pretty soon, for my 4.5 gigabytes of data a month, I could sequence several people's genomes.
So, it's interesting that the genome sequencing industry, if there is such a thing, there's a couple of companies around the world that are offering services to be able to, work out what you're predetermined to become or...
And we've seen companies like 23andMe who've sort of had a slap across the wrist, and probably a little bit more than that, because they haven't followed the FDA's proper licensing. Mm. But, those companies don't do a full sequencing. They do what they called identifying short genetic sequences, looking for particular diseases and seeing whether you're more likely to get them or not, whether you've got the genetic markers for this.
Right.
This is a full genetic sequencing of your genome.
Okay.
And it takes a while to do, and hence it's expensive. But this new hardware that's come out is only costs about $10 million.
Right.
But it is significantly cheaper than what's available today, and therefore is going to reduce the cost down to about $1,000.
Yeah, right.
And it's powerful enough to sequence 16 human genomes every 3 days, which doesn't sound like a lot, but there is a lot of data there.
3 days, doesn't sound...
Have we done the math on how to break even with that?
Well, they were talking about 10 years plus or minus, which is still a long time, especially in when you're talking about technology, that what's going to happen in 2 years' time, are you going to have equipment that's going to be 50% cheaper than that? And therefore, this investment that you've made is suddenly going to be, fairly worthless.
Mm.
But it is it's good, because what it will mean is that more and more people can afford to have their DNA sequenced, looking for specific things.
I wonder if they'll still... Because, 23andMe were wrapped over the knuckles for essentially making the conclusion, taking your genome and saying this is what you're predestined to get or whatever. Are they now just simply doing the sequencing for interpretation later? Is that sort of the model they're turning to?
I think 23andMe has suspended their program until they can figure out a deal with the FDA.
Right.
Because they got such a strong rap on the knuckles that it's actually forced them to stop and think about what they're doing.
Yeah.
So they will They will make a re-entry into the market at some point, but I think they've sort of suspended their testing for now.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, time is flying by. It's 16 minutes to one here on TechnoGaze. We're covering some of the latest in tech. We've got a little bit more to cover before the end of the show, including Mac, the Apple Mac turned 30.
Sex with glass.
Sex with glass. Why not? There has to be a sex story at least once a week, right?
Sorry, what, are we TMZ now?
And I think we're going gambling with Bitcoin.
Oh, very good. We'll be back with more of that in a few moments.
Technogaze
here on Joy 94.9. We're talking tech. And
pause there.
Caught us by surprise. If you like to text us while we're in the studio here, you can do so by texting us 0427 Joy 949.
Don't text us to tell us that we're part of a mass disturbance, though.
No, in a registered way, in a citizen way. Very scary. Now, big for some. News this week.
What, for Fapples?
For Fapples. For this side of the desk, anyway. Fapple.
It's two against one this week. It's so good. Now you know what it feels like.
Yes.
I don't even know what's going on.
So the Apple Mac was introduced in 1984 on the 24th of January, no less. And today's date here in Australia is the 25th, but over in the US right now, it is still the 24th of January. So today is the 30th anniversary of the Apple Mac.
Happy birthday, Mac.
Happy birthday.
So it's really good that the Mac has been around for 30 years, but none of us got into it until the last 5 years.
Well, this is it, right? We were actually talking about this before the show, and there's significance in Apple and how they, sort of brought the personal computer to the world with the Apple IIe. In fact, the Apple II computer, not just the IIe. I'm biased towards the Apple IIe because that was my first computer.
Do you remember using Logo at school and making your turtle turn
around? Logo.
Absolutely.
Trying to make patterns, like make your screen look like a kaleidoscope.
The problem with
we're
Logo...
We're not actually talking about the Mac now, we're talking about the Apple IIe.
I'm sure it was available for the Mac, but the problem with Logo, just on that side note, is that I already knew how to program pretty heavily back when
I first got introduced. Knew how to program.
That is my story. It was a bit sort of passé. It's like, oh, a turtle moves around the screen. Yeah, what do you do? I've made entire, like...
I did that years ago.
Well, yeah.
Do you remember trying to figure out how to make the turtle flood fill an area of the screen? You had to, like, draw over everything, turn, move one, turn again, then draw over everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, the Mac...
Yes.
30 years.
So a bunch of Apple execs actually gave Computer World a bit of an exclusive. Phil Schiller, Bud Tribble, and Craig Federighi. I don't know how to say
this
name.
This is basically the point at which we realise we should have practised the names before the show.
It's almost as bad as tennis names for the news this week. They got together with Computer World and sort of did a bit of a blow your own horn kind of thing around where Apple was at. Now, they made mention of the underlying concept that has stuck with Mac since its inception, that the design of the OS and the hardware should bend to the user, not the other way around.
Funny because they've gone the complete other direction with the iPhone.
Well, the users should bend to the system.
Yeah.
Well.
Okay, now we're getting philosophical.
This is an interesting point because, you know, Apple fanboy, biased mind, whatever. I say they've always designed it with the person in mind, with the human in mind.
Sure, yeah.
And I guess a lot of other phone companies have had to do the same now with because the iOS is out there. It seems that, you know, they've come to it with a philosophy, and this is not reflected in the fact that everything is controlled walled garden that is Apple. So, you know, there's two sides to that, but
So look, we'll just interrupt and just go to the email that we just received. We just said that we've only been using Macs for the last 5 years or so, and thank you to Mark, who just emailed in and said that he's been there for 29 years, and he also added, which is sad.
But that brings up a good point.
It's also awesome, so that's fine.
Yeah, 30 years is a long time, and I guarantee there are heaps and heaps of people out there who don't know what the original Mac looked like. So if you go to apple.com, you can see a photo of the original Mac, and it looks so primitive compared to what we have today.
I know what the original Mac looked like because they keep using it in Futurama.
You watch a little bit too much Futurama then, perhaps.
Everyone knows what the Mac looks like.
But, I mean, for its time, it needed to be designed in such a way to A, make it look a little bit sort of friendly compared to all the other...
Oh, look, compared to the beige boxes that were around back then...
Not even beige boxes. We're talking, you know, boxes on, you know, grey, disgusting, you know, there was nothing aesthetic about it at all.
No. No, absolutely not. Not with the PC. Come
on, it's not like the original Mac was a
work of art. Yeah, sleek.
The original Mac is not what the Macs are like today. It's a tiny, tiny little beige box with a tiny screen in it.
Okay, but Jason, you weren't there in 1984.
I was there in 1984.
How old are you?
Seven or eight?
Yeah, okay, I was a little bit older. And compared to what was out there, the Mac was, you know, fantastic. You know, I craved an Apple Lisa, for those people who remember a Lisa.
Ah.
That was like...
Well, if only that one took off. That was actually slightly... Like, if you look at the Mac and the Lisa, I actually think the Mac is slightly better aesthetically than the Lisa.
Hmm.
But again, subjective.
Yes.
It does appear to be a lot of Mac love out there because we've suddenly got a whole bunch of SMSs coming in. Thank you to whoever just SMSed and told me that I can never watch too much Futurama. Oh, that was Callum. Thank you. And just so quickly, our very own Raina said that she wouldn't have gotten into technology at all if it wasn't for the Mac and the whole enthusiast thing around it a long time ago. And she thinks she's not alone.
Hmm. Yes, there is a sort of nostalgia to the Apple brand, which they capitalise on, perhaps, as well.
Yeah.
But yes, no, happy birthday, Apple Mac. You know, it's a far vastly different platform than what it was back then, but it still holds to some of the original components as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, have we got anything more? Oh, Bitcoin. One of our favourite topics. We do like to tread carefully on when we come to Bitcoin, but this is a little bit lighthearted. I think some casinos are getting in on the action, right?
Well, we've spoken about Bitcoin and how the exchange rate between Bitcoin varies so much and it's almost like gambling. Well, you can now gamble with Bitcoin in Vegas. There are a couple of casinos that have started accepting it alongside with your usual sort of payment methods to buy chips in the casino.
Ah.
So you can gamble twice.
Yeah, that's right.
You can gamble on your currency and gamble on the slot machines.
Well, if you do manage to retain some money, by the time you sort of buy or sell your Bitcoin and then buy it back again, you might make a small fortune. Now, one of the casinos is called the Golden Gate Casino, and what's really interesting is that they are no stranger to introducing new technology.
Now, what is the example of this?
Their claim to fame is that they were the first casino in the city. So the very first casino in the city to install a telephone back in 1907.
That'd be back in your day, wouldn't it?
Something like that. Thanks.
So just to drag us kicking and screaming back to 30 years of the Mac for a minute, we just got an email from Adrian who pointed out that there's a lovely rainbow flag of balloons on the iMac on the Apple webpage.
Oh, that's sweet.
On the front page. Anyway, sorry, let's go talk about Bitcoins.
Yeah. Yes. So Bitcoin is... there's this concept, I guess, of it being more and more widely accepted. So
yeah, it's gaining legitimacy as more and more businesses start to accept it.
It's gaining, like, when we say more and more, excuse me, when we say more and more companies are starting to accept it, we're talking about shifting the dial from 0 to 100 by like an increment of 2.
Yeah.
Okay, we're coming off a low base, but it's got to start somewhere. So if you want to launder some money through your casino, you now can.
I wish I'd known about that when I had my casino.
Oh, on that note, this is TechnoGaze. It's getting very close to the end of the show. We'll be wrapping up in a few moments. Oh, and a final topic we'll talk about, Facebook.
No, we won't.
No, we're going to talk about sex.
Oh, right. No, yes. No,
that has nothing to do with Facebook.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Technogaze.
Technogaze here on Joy 94.9. We're almost at the end of the show. It's getting to that time. Very quickly, though.
We're going to talk about two of our favourite subjects.
Google
tech
Glass.
And sex. I thought you'd given us the wind-up already.
We need to, but yes, no, very quickly. So there's a new app available for Google Glass, right?
Yes. Now, I have a question.
So just to point this out, like the Google Glass is not publicly available, and the people who currently have Google Glass are called explorers, so hey, seems appropriate.
Yes. Now, I have a general question. Is it tacky to have a mirror over your bed?
It is considered... It's considered tacky and porny.
Right. So
I don't know if porny is a word, but it is now.
I don't know how you're going to sort of think about this new app through Google Glass, but basically what you can do is, using this app, you can see what your partner in bed sees when they're looking at you.
No, but the point with this is that both participants are supposed to be wearing glass.
Yes.
Because you're supposed to be able to see what their glass is broadcasting to you and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So, You don't get to just see it by wearing glass. Two people have to wear glass.
Yeah, both of you need to wear it. And you get to see, like you said, the participant. Now, what's really interesting are some of the commands to make it work. Mm. So you can whisper gently into it and say, okay, Google, it's time, and it starts recording. And the best bit is how you turn it off. All you have to say is, okay, glass, pull out.
I thought you were joking with this.
Oh.
No. And you
can... So this is why apps can't register new hot words on iOS for Siri commands.
Yes, and you can also use your iPhone as a third camera if you want to get that perspective. And of course, if you want to evaluate your performance, you can watch the video up to 5 hours afterwards.
I can't wait for the Fitbit integration so that you can assess your physical performance.
We have to wind up the show, I'm afraid. You know, as much as this intelligent discussion is.
Oh, okay.
As always...
Mark's broken our run of puns.
I know, right? I know. I'm sorry. If you have missed any part of the show and you want to listen to the previous any previous episodes, you can do so by tuning in or sending your web browser to joy.org.au/technogaze. Coming up next is a Joy News Bulletin with Shannon and Pete Dillon with Cravings straight after that. Thank you for coming in today, Jason.
You're quite welcome. It's been a pleasure. And okay, Google Glass, time to pull out.
And thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
See you later.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.